Hey guys, before we get started with the podcast, I want to give a quick shout out to one of our sponsors, a company that is very close to my heart, W&R Studios. They have recently launched a brand new website, cloudagentsuite.com. The Cloud Agent Suite includes the industry's most popular and award-winning product line, including Cloud CMA, Cloud Streams, Cloud MLX, and Cloud Attract. I'm sure the listeners of this podcast know better than anyone. Agents deserve better software. So check out cloudagentsuite.com and try all their products free for 30 days. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor of the Industry Relations Podcast, please drop me a line at gregrobertson@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and now on with the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Industry Relations with Rob and Greg. This is Rob Hahn, one of your co-hosts. And I'm actually sitting across the table once again from my other co-host, Greg. How are you?
Hola, Rob.
I don't know why I find this so funny. You always get me laughing, and it's always better to actually have you say that to me in person. We are hanging out in Dana Point. Lovely, lovely Dana Point in Orange County.
It's wonderful to have you here in Orange County once again, Rob.
Wonderful to be
Welcome
back.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
Thank you. I've always loved coming here. We're looking at the blue Pacific Ocean, beautiful clear skies, the hills.
We've got a babbling brook right next to us.
We do
here.
Have a babbling
so
brook.
So if you hear that in the background, that's it's babbling, but we're babbling too. So
I think
babble will be over that babble.
That's right. And we just got done attending the Inman Disconnect in the Desert meeting, which I thought was very cool. So I just thought, we just kick off by... what'd you think? What was your experience?
Yeah, I think this is the second time he's done it. He calls it Inman Disconnect. The first one was up, I think it was right before the normal connect, or right after.
I believe so, yeah.
And it was up in Sonoma.
They went camping, I think, that time.
Yeah, there was honestly, I heard some mixed feedback from that. The trip up there was kind of rough, and these buses and everything else. But obviously it was enough where he got enough feedback to say, yeah, I want to do this again.
Yeah.
And he went the high road here, meaning the venue was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, the Parker Hotel in Palm Springs.
Wow.
Wow. Great service, great vibe. And it's really, I think, really was a perfect venue for what he was trying to put across.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of lead up to it, about this kind of his narrative of this leadership in the industry.
Yep.
Set out an agenda, had some pretty good speakers there, some kind of bigger names.
Yep. It was an event with a purpose. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were, I read a lot of the stuff they wanted me to read beforehand. I was kind of getting into it on that level, and it was great. I could just drive out there, so that was good for me. So I had signed up almost right away after talking to him. We just finished it up earlier today, it ended about 12.
Yeah.
And then we both drove down here to Dana Point, where you guys would be here for a couple days.
And no, I think just one night, and then we're flying back home. We just couldn't. And when you're in Southern California, Palm Springs is great, but Orange County is also, the ocean, the whole thing.
Yeah, beautiful
so,
view.
So, yeah, it's been wonderful. What sessions did you go to?
I went to pretty much everything, right? Okay. I mean, the way that it was selected was you had the first evening kind of kickoff when you got there, a cocktail hour, and then I forget the woman's name. But
Patty McCord.
Yeah, from
Netflix.
From Netflix.
Yep.
She did a great job.
She's phenomenal.
Getting things kicked off for the event, and Brad up there. And, that's the whole thing. It's like we were talking about this earlier. In any conference, any event, you can nitpick on the speakers. You can nitpick on this. I mean, you couldn't nitpick on the venue at all here. What is shining right through, though, is like that Brad is all heart on this.
No doubt about it, man.
He is invested in this industry. He wants this industry to do better. It's great when you're like your business and your personal things kind of line up, right?
Sure.
So that's a good thing for him. But, good for him for putting those things in alignment, right?
Yeah.
Just on everything he was doing, he really wanted to engage. He wanted everybody else to engage. He wanted to make this, I guess the kind of goal in the beginning was Iwani principles?
The Iwani principles,
right.
Yeah.
This was, so he had a kind of a framework in mind for us to go through these kind of things that they set us on, and then at the end come up with these list of principles.
So let me actually explain a little bit about that. When I got engaged in this whole thing, he and I chatted, and I kind of got a little bit of the backstory. I think it might be important for the audience. So the Iwani principles were a set of things that urban planners, architects, and people involved in construction and urban planning, I guess they did back in the 70s, and Brad told a story about that as well, which is this was sort of the birth of the new urbanism movement, right? And Brad, as a journalist back then, as a young journalist, was just involved reporting on it. But the people who are there are, like I said, city planners, architects, developers, just who are tired of the old way of things, right? And And I think the way you put it was at the time, like the cities were just crumbling, right? I mean, we're talking about like urban blight, you know, the New York City, the blackout and riots and all this trouble. And everything was just being pushed out to the suburbs. And, you know, so there was a group of people who said, you know, there's got to be a new way, a new vision. And they came together, apparently spent like a weekend, you know, just debating each other, discussing, you know, these principles of development. And they came out with a manifesto, you know, sort of, here's a set of principles. It wasn't like a to-do list. It was just, you know, principle of high density, you know, of walkability, of sustainability, things like that. And then they all went home and started like designing buildings or designing towns or developments that incorporated those things. So I think he wanted to do the same thing for real estate.
And his point is like it took a long time, but it had about the spark there.
Right.
And you can see that now with these downtowns that are really vibrant now with
exactly.
all these things. I mean, a lot of
exactly.
people will call it gentrification at some point too.
Right.
But really that kind of walkability and those areas that used to be like you would never walk down there
That's
at
right.
night are now the core of the city. You know, restaurants and bars and all
right.
this kind of fun stuff, outdoor.
Right.
And that basically came from that spark
that
of,
wanting,
those, of
right.
people kind of going together. I think that's where, yeah, you're right. He so wanted this to kind of almost emulate that in a sense.
Bingo.
Right?
And I think for that, I feel like Brad sort of intended this maybe as the start of kind of his legacy gift to the industry. And from that standpoint, man, like, we got to just give the man credit. Like, we got to just
totally.
Applaud, like you said, the heart, the spirit, the intent behind it, you know. And honestly, like, this was not an inexpensive event. But I'm not convinced that he made any money on this, given some of the speakers that were brought in. I mean, the facilities. I think this might have been him just saying,
really
"I don't care about
that." You really love
looking
at the expense lines of things, don't you?
Well, you know, it's the. I'm not an accountant, but maybe I should have been. I'm just saying, like, you know, in other words, I don't want people to ascribe this to. It was just a ploy. It was just a money making venture. I don't think it was that at all. I think this was really Brad from his heart, you know, saying, "I want to do something." Yeah. Do something good for the industry, do something important. At a minimum, I think I could say it was a good start. You know, there's obvious things we need to talk about that come out of this, but I think it was a really good start. And the motivation, I mean, we just got to go ahead and applaud the man. If you're listening, Brad, we're applauding you.
No, and then, you know, it's like at the end when we were kind of putting things together, and then I guess you had Caroline from his office who.
Right.
Who is listening to all these things and then kind of editing them into
right.
into
the set
this.
Of principles,
and they're
going
right.
to
set, I guess, once she's done editing, she's going to send that out
right.
to everybody. No, I felt like I wanted to be somebody that could kind of contribute to, like, you know, the wording
right.
or the editing of some of those things out there.
Right.
But, you know, at the same time, I think you were lamenting as well, but I didn't get to be in every, there was like a group on open data,
right.
you know, your group that you
right.
led, there was another group on all sorts of different things. So, I couldn't be everywhere at once.
Right.
You had to trust the fact that, you know, they kind of bashed that idea out, especially the data stuff, right? I mean, this industry just is so in love with its data,
so,
right?
Let me make a meta observation, I suppose, okay? And this really struck me today, you know, as we're sort of wrapping up and we're sitting there and reflecting back to kind of the story that Brad told in the beginning. And the thing that really struck me was back in the, whatever, 60s or 70s, when he did that Iwani principles thing, the strong impression I got was these were outsiders. These were architects and city planners and whoever.
Who brought them together? I mean,
I don't know.
I got to research that.
I think it would be cool to research and maybe ask Brad sometime,
right.
you know, maybe get him on, see if he wants to come on this and talk that story. But my sense that those were the outsiders, they're the rebels. That's the way you put it, right? That these were people that were being ignored by the establishment, you know, whoever was in charge or power then. This time around, at least for us, at this event, like, everyone there, they were the power structure. Do you know what I mean? It was so interesting. Like, these aren't the rebels that gathered and said, you know what, the old guard is like this, and we need to, here our principles are challenging real estate's, you know, status quo. This is the old guard. Like, these are the establishment, right?
You could argue these are the ones that actually can make things happen too, right?
You could, absolutely.
Right.
But I think that it changed maybe some of the principles, right, that we came up with. Because it's one thing if you're trying to rebel against, you know, the established order. It's another thing altogether to sort of be part of that order and come up with principles. So I guess in a way, I'm sort of curious, like, not that something like this could happen. And I don't even know what that even looks like in real estate, right? But is there some sort of rebel group out there, you know, some bunch of vendors, you know, who are just starting out, right? like not MLS or associate execs or...
Well, I think
I don't even know who they would be.
No, but... I know who they'd be. I mean, they're being funded right now. They're the Open Door. They're the
Prop Tech guys?
Yeah, I mean, those guys, I mean, they are definitely kind of cutting in and shaking things up.
Yeah, right? By the way, that's a new term we learned, Prop Tech.
Well, that's been around a little bit, but yeah, FinTech, Prop Tech, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It would be interesting then is...
I mean, don't you think? I mean, aren't those the iBuyers and that kind of thing being the ones, right?
Maybe. Knock. I mean, yeah. I guess, but so is that it? In other words, like, are there brokers and agents? Are there association execs? Are there rebels? You know, like Jonathan Boatwright from Austin came and, you know, he presented, he spoke, and he mentioned, like, one of the reasons why he came and, you know, was invited to lead a session was because he and a bunch of folks engineered a revolt in Austin, right? It took over about half the board seats. You know, would those people have a different set of principles than, you know, maybe somebody like Elizabeth Mendenhall, you know, who's the president of NAR.
Who was there, yeah.
Who was there. So I don't know the answer to any of that, right? So as a meta level comment, one of the things I'm not saying it necessarily changes anything, but it did make me wonder, like, what would this conference have looked like if it weren't the leaders of the industry, if they were the rebels of the industry, whether that's prop tech guys or new vendors or agents and brokers who are just, you know, railing against, you know, what they see as sort of the establishment, or I don't even know if there's such a thing as like a rebel association exec, right? Some rebel MLS.
Right.
I don't even know if they exist, but, you know, would it have been different if it was those people getting together in the desert?
Maybe, but, you know, it's so far... It's being proved that it's the valley in a sense, right? I mean, would some rogue band of taxi drivers, you know what? We could do it better in a different way.
Right?
Let's get to, you know, why don't we let them see when we're showing up? Why don't we put us on a map? Why can't they just click on their phone and call us? These medallions are ridiculous.
Right.
Why does it have to be just me? I've got friends who can do this, right?
Right.
Unless the revolution is well capitalized, I'm not sure it's going to be that big of a revolution, right? I think what's going to happen in those kind of, what mm-hmm. you're talking about, is there are some things that you can do kind of tangentially that are technology related or other things. But, you know, some of the stuff that they talked about were pretty heady issues and pretty controversials, like low-income housing. Right?
Housing affordability.
I mean, the whole NIMBY crowd can, you know, go there. But what I think a lot of the argument was is that everybody's going to have to be able to live in multiple socioeconomic neighborhood, maybe, right? Instead of looking at that as a, not in my neighborhood, but, you know, embrace that. Now, that to me feels like there's got to be a group of people that are going to commit to that, and they're going to be the people that are going to champion that and right. kind of be the better person.
Right.
And kind of do that. Now, those are few and far between, but that's not going to be funded by Wall Street. So some of the stuff I think you need to change these things have to come from a cultural level, a grassroots level, and not... But some of the other stuff, I think, is more likely to be funded.
I'm still processing it because, like I said, I mean, this just ended.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we just drove back. So, you know, I haven't had time to, like, really process. But right now, like, my post on this, I think, might be something along the lines of principles are dangerous things to have. Because if you have them, they govern action. And they have consequences, right? And some of the principles that we all just sort of adopted by acclamation have consequences. And I got to tell you, Greg, I'm real curious to see how they play out. Like, the next phase. And I've heard some people, you know, kind of mention this criticism, like, well, you know, it's great we have these principles. What are we supposed to do about them? Like, that wasn't the purpose of this event, right? That might be what happens maybe in July in San Francisco. It might be what happens in next meeting, you know,
right.
when these people
right.
get together. Yeah. But the fact that we all sort of, as many of the leaders of the real estate industry, agree to these principles... I guess I'm saying if we were genuine and honest about that, they have real consequences, right? Housing affordability is actually a really good one. To your point, you know, that's kind of high in the sky. At the same time, if we as real estate industry are saying this is now a principle, well, dude, that's got consequences, right? You know, it means maybe like the associations of realtors, the national, you know, state and local
right.
start saying... We don't care if this results in a property value decrease. Right. We have to have affordable housing.
Expert housing has to be this.
Right. Yeah. That's a tough thing to...
Yeah, but, you know, it's like small things. Like, I remember reading an article somewhere about how, you know, like in the graphic arts world,
yeah,
where these kind of principles or whatever, where people said to themselves, you know what, we're going to start putting more people of color in our stock images,
mm-hmm,
and in our illustrations for ads.
Right.
And just that was like kind of a principle that, you know, some of the artists in the world or the people that are doing that were just, they put into practice. There was no big meeting. Right. There was no big kind of things. But those little nudges, when your kids start thumbing through magazines and they see more people of color, right, maybe more interracial, you know, relationships, or it could be as fact as, you know, same sex, mm-hmm, you know, things like that. And those images, they start showing up in magazines and commercials and everything else. Those little things do add up to a lot,
sure,
right? Another thing I remember watching on Netflix, like this chef's thing where there was this one place, I think it was in Italy, that had the best Parmesan cheese ever.
Right.
And there was an earthquake. And
I think
their,
I saw this.
Their,
yeah,
whole warehouse was almost completely destroyed.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
they,
yeah,
and the cheese was going to go bad, man. The cheese was going bad. So one chef decided, and through his network of people, said, you know what? I'm going to make this dish that needs a lot of freaking cheese, man.
Right.
Right? And I want all the chefs in the world,
right,
to
make this dish.
Make this dish, and, right, therefore they're going to have to get this cheese to make this dish. And therefore you have this, again, a small thing, but through the community, it actually made a difference and, mm-hmm, kind of saved this guy's business. And,
right,
then he can continue while they rebuilt to kind of make the best cheese out there. Right. So, I mean, it's a little... It's not quite there, but there are things where I think where people in a community can make choices to themselves, like principles or something else.
Sure.
That, sure, they can be dangerous, but at the same time, I don't think anybody carved more things in cheese and stone and, like, everybody had a,
right,
blood sign it.
Right, right.
Or on the thing about, like, include more people of color in stock photos.
Right.
People got together and says, yeah, you know, that's a good idea.
So let me rephrase.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. Maybe, I'm not saying the principles are dangerous, like, in a negative way. I guess what I'm really trying to say is that principles are impactful, right? I mean, if you have them, if you really have principles, it changes your behavior. It results in whether small things like you just mentioned or large actions or policy changes or whatever, it has to result in some sort of action.
Right.
And it's kind of like that OODA loop. So one of the presenters,
yeah,
is this great, he was fantastic,
yeah,
Rye, I can't remember his last name,
yeah,
but... It was a former U.S. Marine, you know, now he's doing sort of a political world stuff, which is fascinating.
Is that a nonprofit kind,
yeah,
of thing?
The guy's obviously service-oriented, and one of the things he talked about was the OODA loop, you know, the observe-oriented side act. I guess I'm sort of like, we could maybe look at these principles as the observe and orient, really. It's the orient, right? Principles are saying, I'm going to orient in that direction. So now what has to happen next is the decision and then the action.
Right.
Right. If we don't have those two things, then...
But I'm just saying small things can make a difference, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
there was a book called Nudge, right?
Absolutely.
And one of the things were in a kid's cafeteria that you put all the healthy foods at eye level, right? And
right,
unhealthy foods that were kind of harder out to get out of the way, you
right,
know, that were harder to get, even coming through a line.
Right.
And that little thing changed people's choices of choosing healthier food, which then, you know, again, I don't...
Small things.
But small things, yes, over time they can kind of make a difference. So
sure,
I look at these things as he's talking about is like, some of them are going to be BHAGs, right? These big, hairy, audacious goals.
Right.
But some of them can be actionable things that you start a little bit now that maybe over time, you know...
Become something bigger,
right? And so that's... in the stuff that he's talking about, I'm always looking for those in our everyday lives, habits.
Right.
We are our habits, right? So if we could just... Oh, Greg, if you could just, like, do 10 push-ups a day in the morning, right? Or, say, you know, or just meditate or whatever. That,
right,
over time is going to kind of have a positive outcome, right?
So
I'm looking forward to seeing what they come up with and, like, seeing if there's anything kind of, like, actionable in that, right?
Well, let me ask you this. So... What was your favorite principle that you heard?
Yeah. Well, the problem was is that they were going back and forth with titles of the principles. They were saying these aren't the final things yet.
Sure.
So I don't know if I could, like...
So maybe make it your impression of whatever the principle might have been. Like, what was your favorite, like, big takeaway?
Well, I like the fact of, like, you know, keeping data free and open, right?
Right.
And that was, you know, even at the end of the thing, they started arguing about it again, right?
So what does that mean?
I just
what
think,
data?
Again, like, right, we talked about before, this industry has such a love affair with its data It can be just a detriment and a hindrance more than anything else, right?
Okay, so now let me put you on the spot.
Okay.
Because I know Open Data, that thing was like a big passion of yours. And I know you got up on stage and basically said, you know, F big data.
Yeah.
Right. And it was around privacy, I think, was your concern around it. So I guess, first of all, before I kind of get on your case about it, like, tell the audience a little bit, like, what you meant by that. You know, share
They were asking about things that you want to change, and like, and this is all in the context of just reading what's going on with Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And just opens up a whole thing of like this, when you click that yes button or you didn't read that EULA, you know, end user license agreement,
right?
What exactly is happening to all those data? And it's just basically, to me, big data becomes just a massive loss of privacy.
Right.
And that is just happening all over the place. When people can aggregate all that data and they can bounce it against stuff and they can kind of make all these predictions. And I think there couldn't be some positive things about that. But like, we have to watch the guys that are stewards of that. And,
sure.
and Facebook is not a great steward. I've never really been a Facebook guy. My Twitter feed updates my Facebook thing, because I just always seem to me a bit kind of creepy, and I'm really struggling why not to delete the damn thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Other than like, a lot of times that's the only way I see some of my family members and their updates of pictures and stuff like that. But is it worth it? Right? You know, some of these apps, were they going to predict that your home's going to sell? And you open that up to too many realtors, what it turns out to be is a stalking. Like, there's, you know, 1,000 postcards in their mailbox.
Yeah.
Their voicemail gets full of realtors calling about, hey, are you looking to do blah, blah, blah?
Sure.
I mean, it just becomes this incessant, you know.
Spam fest.
Spam, invasion,
yeah.
You know, whatever you want to call it. Stalking.
Yeah.
Right now, there's a lot of vendors out there who they have products. And the products are not really, you know, as they say, if the product's free, you're the product, right? In real estate right now, there are a bunch of products. Their whole thing is to get your data and do something. My company, we always ascribe to the whole thing. We make a good product and you pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not selling things out of the back end of it. I'm not gathering data and organizing the big data to kind of do something else. I'm just creating a product that I think is good. And if it's good, people are going to pay for it. I don't want to have an ulterior motive. There's so many of these companies out there to me that are just, their whole thing is like acquiring this data. Oh yeah, here's a great app, use that. And then like smiling, but in the back of the warehouse, they're selling out something in the back of the warehouse to some other guy, right? And it seems to me is a little bit swarmy.
So let me ask you this, because this is the thing that I think is going to be the challenge, which is a lot of the principles to me have the danger of becoming, you should do this, not I should do this. When principles become really powerful is when it transforms into I should do this, right? So something like open data, I mean, it feels like it's easy for you, like you just mentioned it. I guess I was going to ask, like, you're a leader, you know what I mean? Like, you have a company, you're the CEO, you're the boss. Like, what will you do different because of some of these principles?
Right.
I hear you, man, you know, but if those companies that are, to your point, aggregating data and selling it out the back, you know, if they say, I don't want to, no, you know what, this is my business, right? I mean, you can't tell them what to do with their business.
No, but I can make it very clear. I can make it very clear what we're doing and what they're doing.
Right.
What's going to happen is if we want to make a pivot and like, oh, well, everybody's doing it. It's not in Dan and I's DNA. We're not those kind of guys to do that.
Right.
We're just product people. We're not like, you know, rubbing our hands together like, oh my God, Wall Street's going to love this, right? I mean, just like making product, right? I mean, and again, God bless
them. See, what you just said, that is a I will do, right? In other words, it's almost like you could end up with a section of Vendor Alley.
Open data could be, it's just to me, it's a way of getting the data. Okay, what you do with it, right? That's to me the principles, right?
Okay, But think about what you just said, right?
Okay.
I will highlight it. You have a voice. Could you imagine a section in Vendor Alley that says data abusers in real estate? Here are companies that I know of, because that's a dangerous step.
Well,
if you think
on,
about it,
to be clear, there's nobody, I think, breaking the law.
Right.
I think they're all kind of open about it. I just don't agree with their business model.
Right.
I don't agree with making something, gathering that data, rejiggering it, making derivative things off it, and selling it to somebody else.
Right.
I'm all about, I make a product.
Right.
If it's good, you pay for me for it. And we go on with our lives, right? It's not a bait and switch type of thing. The bait and switch is very apparent. Google, right?
Sure.
I use Gmail. I understand the swap we've made.
Yep.
I get great email. I get great spam filtering, and they
sell you.
Sell their bots all in there to kind of gather stuff. In some cases, I might be considered a hypocrite on things. It's just if in my industry, when I'm doing it myself, that's just kind of the path that Dan and I have chosen.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is what I'm getting at, right?
I mean, but they're not abusers. I mean, they're not breaking, you know, if their data access agreements along with the MLSs allow them to do it, and a lot of MLSs do, that's the way they want to do business. I'm not about that.
Right.
Right.
But it's, like I said, I mean, the principal thing is super interesting when it moves from, like, NAR should do this, or you should do this, or the government should do this, and turn it inwards to, I should do this.
Right.
Right. So, like, imagine, you know, I saw, like, there were some real big leaders in that audience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Lots of people, like, CEOs of major companies. I imagine, like, them walking away from this, if they've internalized some of these principles, you know, and go home and go, I'm going to change the way our company does things. That's when we start to see some of this translate into the decision and the action, right?
Right.
And, boy, I can't wait to see if... Well, first of all, if anybody's going to do some of that. And second of all, what they're going to do. Because, you know, I mean, some of those principles, like the raise the bar principle, like we've been talking about that for 20 years. I don't know that we've actually done anything about that.
Right.
And it's one of those tough things. It's like the government should raise the bar, right? You know, we need tougher licensing standards. Yeah, you know, okay. But very rarely does it become... I am going to do things differently. And what I'm kind of hoping comes out of this maybe is, okay, it's not about Elizabeth, you should do this, or it's not about NAR, you should do this, or, you know, some other company, you should do this. It's what am I going to do? That's maybe when we start to see the transformation.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to seeing what these kind of things flesh out to be in the copy of the how they're written and everything
else.
But wouldn't it be great to, like, you know, I was talking to the head of... You know, former head of Century 21.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to, you know, Elizabeth, who's president of NAR, of John, who's, you know, the new president-elect of NAR.
Right.
And, you know, David Sharon and other vendors in MySpace, right? And having some good conversations, which were facilitated by the content that was being delivered to us at that event. But then, like, if something goes down that I'm like, well, that's kind of a bullshit move to call up and say... You know, Philip, we talked about this stuff over there. You know, this seems like really...
Counter to the principle.
Counters to what we all kind of like we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And at least maybe that serves as a device to start a conversation with somebody where you're not like coming at them like, but like from a good place, right?
Right.
I don't know. That's a lofty goal maybe, but it could be at the very end, maybe it does. Maybe that's all it does. It serves as a device for people to communicate with each other about... how you kind of do business or how we make things better, right?
Right, right.
I mean, it's optimistic and, you know, I caution myself because I'm so goddamn jaded cynical sometimes.
You cynic, you?
I don't want to be.
Right.
You know, I don't want to be.
Right. And look, me too. I mean, I thought, who was it? One of the guys got up and said, you know, I have a hope, right?
Yeah.
And hope is a great gift. You know, and from that standpoint, I'd say this was very, very successful. I know we're kind of running out of time here, but... For the audience, you know, this is probably a little different than our normal industry relations. But you got to understand, we just came out of 2 days of pretty heady ideas and, you know, principles and philosophy stuff going down in Palm Springs. But we think it could be something really important, and we think it could maybe lead to real action and real change. So we're kind of excited about it.
We'll see what happens.
And we hope something does change.
Yeah, thanks to Brad and everybody in
absolutely
making this happen.
With that, why don't we sign off and go for the next one?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks everybody.